proceed with the voting procedure?
Vota nesse aí,
So the other three have nominated Mr. Timonier, who stands in as the chairperson, and the other three have nominated Mr. Baba, who is the chairperson. Now we need to vote for one chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I believe all of you with Assalamu alaikum. This obviously gives me the casting vote here. Yeah? Thank you very much for that. I will indeed support the nomination of the Honourable Father. I think he needs the experience as well. Thank you, Chairperson.
We may now call Mr. Father. Thanks to all members of the committee, and I call Mr. Baba to be the chairperson of the committee.
You are even working like a chair.
Shall I give you opening remarks? Give you notes for to open the meeting?
Thank you, members. I first want to welcome all of you, and just firstly, Honourable Launce, I'll give that to you. Chairperson, I just want to find out, because there was a few giggles this morning, but we're actually embarrassing the select committee because members are not attending. And this is something that we've raised on numerous occasions in the select committee. We also said that when members cannot be here, they must submit written apologies. Now, we do have a co-chair. Now, we've got an apology from the chairperson that they're not here, but we have a second chairperson. Did we receive a written apology from the other chairperson that they will not be here either?
Yes.
Okay. Now, the other members we have in the committee that's not yet, we receive apologies from all the members. Can I establish or can it be assisted here? Are these apologies in writing as required? Thank you. Yes, as a chairperson, I just want to say, yes, we have to ask the secretary this question, because obviously we just came here, so I can't answer you on that. So for the secretary to ask me to answer it is definitely not the right procedure. I will not be able to answer that. So if she got it in writing, we would also like to see that it is in writing. Please, secretary, on the next meeting. Honourable David?
I suppose we started on a wrong footing. Can I please that probably you open the meeting, go through the normal agenda process so that you can. I think honourable members overtook the event by asking you and dragging you to apologies when you should be starting the meeting. Can we probably follow that?
No problem, Honourable Terry. We can go with that. First, again, I would like to welcome everyone to the department. Welcome. Sorry for what you've seen here today. Unfortunately, this is not the way you usually open meetings. And I would like to first know about the apologies. We've heard some of the apologies at the moment. Secretary, I'd like us to also see that it is in writing, that at the next meeting that we can see if it was
writing. And I'm not going to even waste any time. I think we start with the... Okay, so the Road Traffic Management Corporation is not here yet. Okay, then we would ask if there's a 30-minute time allocation. I would like us to stick with that, please, with the Rail Safety Regulator on your annual report. Thank you.
Chair, honourable members, good morning. My name is Andre Harrison. I'm a board member of the Railway Safety Regulator. Our chairperson, Dr. Pumta, has asked her apologies. She's not able to make it to the meeting today, and I will be standing in for her. I just would like to first introduce the members of the Railway Safety Regulator that are present today. On my right is our CEO, Mr. Poyat. Next to him is Mr. Celaleri. On his right and on my left is Mr. Ntate. So, Chair, with a few opening remarks, I just want to say that as a Railway Safety Regulator, we look back on the 1670 year with a fair amount of pride. We've achieved most of our targets. We are improving in most spheres, particularly in the area of safety. If we see the decline in the number of incidents over time, we are pleased to see that there's an improving trend, and that is really our mandate. I will now hand over to Mr. Poy, with your permission, to do the actual presentation. We have hit a stop block, to use railway terminology. There is no connection for our computers to your projection screen. And so we will be doing our presentation off the paper copies of your permission. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, just want to know if all the members do have the presentations with them available. Honourable Ntebe, after you've eaten, can you first tell us if you have?
Yes, Chair. We, I think we all have the presentation.
Thank you. Then I will allow you and your team to go on with the presentation.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. I've got just an outline of what I will be bringing to the attention of the committee. We'll share what's the general opinion. And we will then talk to the audit outcome. We'll also try and share with the 2016-17 findings, the performance trends, the key achievements or non-achievements that we have seen as a regulator. We will also take the committee through our flagship project. We will also share with the committee our social responsibility. We will also bring the committee to our internal activities, which is the HR and financial overview. And we will then at the end try and bring to the committee attention to our strategic and emerging risks that we have and plan initiatives. Honourable Chairperson, this year we received an unqualified audit opinion from the Auditor General with a non-compliance on expenditure management. And I think that is probably in the next page we give a timeline in terms of how we have performed. Compared to last year, we had 20 findings in 2015 financial year. The year that we are in, or the annual report that we're presenting, we only had 11 findings and only one recurring finding. And I think that's really what we intend to do as a growing organization. It is possible that whenever you have growth and you're putting new things in place, then you need to put new internal controls in place. What we pride ourselves in is trying to reduce the number of recurring findings that we actually have. And that's what we have done as an organization. The next slide is just giving more detail about exactly what were those particular findings that with the 11 findings that we picked up. But I think what is most important with this particular finding is that it's the magnitude of them, or the materiality, for lack of a better word.
in terms of the finding that, yes, the non-compliance finding in terms of expenditure, payment not made within 30 days, we understand that, but obviously for us, in terms of number, it's not that many, but it is definitely a non-compliance issue. I think in the next slide, we then show that over time, we have received over the past 4 years unqualified audit opinions. In terms of the performance trends, through Chairperson, we're showing a comparison between the 2012-2013 financial year and the 2016-2017 financial year. The organization, I think, as Mr. Harrison has shared, our board member, we look back really in the 2016-17 financial year with five. And we show that in the graphical representation that 58% of our performance in terms of the predetermined objective that we had in the 12-13 financial year. But over the last three financial years, we've been way over 80%, 85, 90, and 89. And that's really the state where we're actually achieving in terms of our performance. The highlight in terms of the annual report in terms of achievement per se, we have we've overhauled the service regime. Now this is how we interface with the operator of the entire railway industry. We give them licenses or what we call permits, and we've overhauled that service regime so that we're able to support them better. We've also put our regional offices countrywide. We have one here in Cape Town. We opened an office in Durban, and we have one in Port Elizabeth, and obviously in Johannesburg, and in Nelspruit. We successfully implemented our safety management system assessment tool in the year that we're coming from, and that assists us to be able to request operators to achieve the desired safety management requirements in terms of Section 28 of the ARSAR Act. We've also adopted regional standards. In terms of subject activities, we also have a responsibility to engage in the subject region. We've also had, during the year, that was 71 inspections that were conducted. Further to the achievement, ARSAR, we published our first set of own regulator standards, most of the standards that we had before. We have always most of the standards that we've had before were being done in collaboration with the South African Bureau of Standards. We've then made sure that we publish our own standards in the year that was. We've had 206 audits that were performed as an organization, and we implemented a paperless environment as an organization. So within our organization, that was a cost-saving measure to be able to remove our printing activities so that we allow everyone to go into a virtual, well, they call it a system that is paperless, but we've also piloted the certification of train drivers. It's a very important safety management activity for us because we need to give, we think piloting drivers or making sure that drivers are professionalized will achieve our desired objectives as an organization. We've grown our revenue by double-digit numbers, by 19%, from 2015-16 to 2016-17. We've also reduced our conferences and seminar costs year on year, and we've implemented our consultancy reduction plan, which has seen us saving about 6.8 million as an organization. Our flagship project, as a regulator, We are part of the Economic Society of South Africa, and we have supported their conference in terms of showcasing our own capabilities in terms of their human factor management. We have human factor specialists within the regulator, and obviously they assist us to be able to make sure that we have a human-centered approach to every activity that we achieve. Certification of train drivers is our pilot project, our flagship project. And as I said earlier, we've licensed over 180 train drivers during that year. And this assists us so that we're able to assist both Prasa and Transnet to professionalize their system and therefore able to achieve better safety performance overall. Especially with this intention that we have as government of making sure that we are funding the railway sector and trying to improve it and make sure that people can use rail as a mode of transport, a safer mode of transport. Accreditation of suppliers. What we've done here is to be able to support the issue of localization, the intention that whenever we buy equipment or particular specifications of equipment or rolling stock, we're able to make sure that there's a particular level of local content. That's not possible just by simply putting it in a contract because the suppliers are not compliant from a safety perspective. In other words, they don't meet the necessary safety requirements. They won't be utilized by the OEM, the original equipment manufacturer, to be able to be part of their system. Mm-hmm. So we work in that space to be able to see how we can partner with government, also partnering with the University of Pretoria, in particular to be able to assist with the supplier accreditation process. Technology review. We have reviewed most of the technologies that are brought into South Africa. We have to approve it before any technology can be utilized. So the Prasa trains have been certified and we are busy with the testing and commissioning process at the moment in up in Pretoria North. And we've come also the issue of 45D locomotives and the new Trans Africa Loco was approved. And we've also had technical training course that we've developed, which is a flagship course for us to be able to assist what you call a grade 12 learner. Because currently at the moment to be a rail safety inspector you need to have an engineering degree. So we're trying to broaden that so that we're able to open it up to most of the grade 12 learners and we'll be able to take them through. It's an NQF level 6 course that we put together, supported by the regulator, and we're working with TITA. And once that is in place, then we'll be able to allow universities to train anyone who wants to be a railway safety inspector in support of the investment that the country has put in place around railway. Non-achievement, this is quite fresh for us, but I think we're learning some of the issues around issues of development of regulation. We would have thought by now, we would have implemented the railway reserve regulation. And I think I'm happy to announce that the department in June 2017 did, even though we missed the deadline of end of March for that regulation, but they managed to publish that regulation and we expect during the 17-18 financial year that regulation on railway reserve and security management would have been put in place so that we're able to support security environment within the railway space. The challenge, if I include Chairperson for members, is that at the moment there is no requirement for operators to ensure that they secure people within the railway reserve and therefore we can't ensure compliance. And that is obviously one challenge that the railway safety, the railway police also have, and we need to put their framework in place of the regulator so that we're able to force operators to comply. Because we issue licenses to them every year, and therefore if they don't comply with the regulation, then they obviously run a risk of not getting their operating licenses. The human factor regulation is also something we expect to be published through this, during this year. We had a bit of a challenge with that regulation from a point of view that it is a new thing. It also deals with the issue of certification of train drivers and there needed to be a lot of engagement with operators so that we all understand each other what we're trying to achieve. We have not also achieved one of our requirements in terms of platform train interface, what we call improvement directives that we issue to operators, and we could not comply with those directives that was issued to them, and that those are the three non-compliances that were performed, which have allowed us to achieve the 89% that we have shared earlier to you, Chairman. On the HR overview, this is just a map that shows more or less where our regional distribution are and which how many number of employees we have at by the end of March 2017. The next slide shows the vacancy rate. We've managed to to effectively reduce our vacancy rate to about 83%. And the question members might have is how do we do that? The board approved a new restructure. We had a new restructuring or structure in place which reduced the number of people who require to implement or do management of oversight of state railway operations to about 293 employees that we actually required. And we were able to only do that, and move to the next slide, I will share it later on how we managed to do that, but we're only able to do that through the implementation of an excellent model. But I think in the slide I'll share a little bit about that excellent model that we put in place. In other words, we wanted people to produce more with less, and that's what we've been able to do. That's why we're able to reduce from 453 employees to 293 to still be able to achieve more. Employment increase numbers, we've got an almost 50-50 split between the number of male and female within the organization, and that's what that slide is trying to show. With the turnover of as an organization of about 5%, which is less than industry average of 10%, and that to us is very good. Yes, you won't be able to satisfy members everyone in the organization, human beings and human beings, but we measure our turnover rate, and we're very happy that we're achieving less than 10%, which is way below what the industry average is within our sector. Women empowerment, we are putting quite a lot of activities that we have as an organization in terms of our women and what we do in achieving women empowerment brought to the procurement level as an organization and achieving, making sure that women are given and supplying equipment or some of the things that we do. We are mostly a people-driven organization, so we talk about intellectual capital, so mostly we're talking about engineering and some of the technical-related activities of consultancy, and that's what we try to do to make sure that we put women at the forefront, both suppliers and our own employees. And that's why the picture that you see there on the right of the picture is how we see our women employees, how they can add value overall to the overall business of the RSI. Youth development is at the heart of what we do as a business. We have a term that we use within the organization of saying we grow our own timber. You can't expect to just cut a tree that we haven't taken time to actually learn. And therefore, that is at the heart of what we do. We have a trainee program. We also have 18 in 10 that we participated in our antenna training program, which is our training program. We also have absorbed those particular trainees at the end of their stay within our training program. Obviously, we can't be able to absorb all of them. We compete quite difficult in the sector for skills. So some of the employees or some of the people we train, you will find they will leave and go to class or Transnet or some of the other engineering companies like Housetrain. We have 52 youth have been provided with financial support as part of our youth development program. What we do, we give batteries at high school level and also at tertiary level to support the youth so that we're able to have a pool of people that we can take from when we want to actually employ them or when we want to take them further into some of our training, internal training activities. This is the same SDIX. I think earlier I said that I will share how we move from 453 to 293 in terms of our excellence model. We measure ourselves in terms of what we call a service delivery index, a performance trend, and we're showing there on that graphical representation how we have performed in terms of our score. From 2014-15, we're sitting at 38 SDIX score. We 15-16 were 67.7. In 16-17, we had a target of 46 and we reached 51. Now, if we improve excellence, it means we don't do things twice, we don't waste. If we do things something once, we do it well, then we're able to improve our activities and productivity levels in terms of the organization to more than 20%, and that's our expectation. And we're doing well in relation to that SDIX score. Move to the next slide. This is just a comparative analysis against industry, against some of the companies in South Africa who put themselves through this rigorous process. of a global innovation index. This index is being done in Switzerland, and obviously you put your organization through that to compare yourself against others internationally and also within the South African context. As you can see, our 2016 score, the red, is the global index from the South African perspective. We are way above what our peers and our other people within the sector are doing, and within private and public companies within the South African space. And we put ourselves through that because we believe if we don't, then we can make appropriate savings and be able to achieve or lead the sector. Because if you're providing oversight within the railway sector, you need to make sure that you're able to provide leadership within that particular sector. Year-on-year revenue for the organization. I think if the chairperson allows me, I think I've got two members that are with me here. I think I'll ask Muso. Muso Sileledi is our chief risk officer, but also he's a CA. He will be able to assist our CFO. I think I forgot to put an apology chairperson for our chief financial officer, Mr. Rekhato. He could not make it with us today, but I think Muso will be able to represent him well in relation to this.
Thank you, CEO, for your chair. On slide 23, the year-on-year revenues, what you will see is significant growth from year 2013-14 all the way to 16-17. In 16-17, our revenues totaled around 254 million. About 150 million came from permits, which we get from granting operators their licenses. So about 60% of our revenues from there. Another 28% of it so came from technology audits, which is when operators introduce new technology, and we then do a review on their technology before they introduce it. And the operating grant from the National Department of Transport, that was about 49 million in 16-17. That's how we get to our revenues of 254 million. If we go to the next slide, because of our scheduling, we are essentially required to budget, not enabled to budget for a surplus, so we budget one-to-one expenditure revenue ratio. That's why you will see that our expenditure pretty much matches our revenue year on year. The next slide tries to give a graphical illustration of our spend on BEE, on triple BEE, throughout, and it divides it on youth, on women, and the total spend overall. We then move to our revenue projections over the MCAP period. As I said, 16-17, our revenue was about 254 million. And then at the end of 19-20, we then crossed over about 300 million for our revenue. So we are a growing organization. And in order to sustain the growth of the organization, we need a corresponding growth in the revenue figure. That talks to the finance number. When we move forward, we go into risk management on slide 28. Here we were just illustrating the strategic risks, the high strategic risks that face the organization. The first one is the inverse of financial sustainability. Financial sustainability is the long-term picture. We are solid on that. On that angle, but in terms of cash flow, we had experienced cash flow challenges during the
okay, I'm not concentrating.
We got that, yeah.
Excuse me, would you just put on record there?
Insufficient cash flow, which we monitor on a quarterly basis through the Audit and Risk Committee. We are putting specific measures as the finance department and the organization as a whole to ensure that we do not run out of cash, our cash balances are healthy and sustainable. So we flag it as a risk, but it receives specific attention. The second high strategic risk is around a term we call regulatory capture. Since we are a regulator, our currency is about independence from operators so that we can deliver the service to stakeholders. So it is very important to be able to implement the regulation in an unbiased manner. So that second risk is around regulatory capture and carrying out our mandate as a regulator. The third one ties into the two non-performances we had earlier, which is the regulation that was delayed in terms of finalizing the work. The next slide talks about emerging risks going forward, and it just gives an indication of what we may face in the medium to long term as things we may need to look out for as an organization and make sure the cooling processes can deal with. The new rail policy is actually a strategic opportunity that we are looking at as an organization to see how the mandate of the RSR can be further improved through policy amendments and efforts. And the slide after that, slide 30, talks to the interventions we will have to be able to deal with the risks that we have shown. There's a railway bill that is currently under review, so we are making comments to that, which will enable us to strengthen our funding model. That deals into point two, which is the permit fee model, how we generate revenue from operators, and also the strategic risk I talked about, improving cash flow. We have specific interventions in place on a quarterly basis to monitor our cash flow position through the audit and risk committee and board report on how they're doing in that front. If I can hand back to the CEO for slide 31.
Right, I think, thank you through the chairperson. I think that slide we were just trying to bring to the attention of the committee that I think members might, I'm wondering, maybe they might not have it, but maybe something important to be able to say there are certain roles that we can play as a regulator. And in terms of the industrial development and some of the activities that the country wants to forward, we have looked and tried to see how we can, as a regulator, support the Black Industrialist Program, as the term is utilized, but how can we assist that within the railway space? Because currently, it's very difficult for you, from a safety perspective, to do or manufacture some of the safety-related components. You might not meet the necessary specifications, and therefore you want to utilize as a Black company wanting to enter that particular space. So the entry or the barriers to entry are quite high within the railway space. And one of the things we are doing with the Department of Trade and Industry is to try and see how we can assist with that particular program from a regulatory point of view without losing our independence. We obviously get involved in reviews of all the technologies, but we therefore have an understanding of exactly what needs to happen for someone to be able to assist themselves to get into that particular railway sector. Now that's something that obviously for us, in partnering with the higher education institutions, which I've mentioned Pretoria University, and West University is one of them, we are looking at ways and means of how we as a regulator can support that particular movement. Obviously that requires a lot of funding, a lot of support, and obviously if GTI is able to support us in that, then we can move together as a partner for them to assist them to achieve their desired objective. At the moment, currently with the PRASA program, you will hear them saying they had a 60% local content, but they're currently probably achieving at about 12-15%. And there's a real reason to that, because some of these components are not possible for them to be manufactured in South Africa, or some of the manufacturing capabilities were there in the past are no longer there, and how do they bring all of those things together? And that's some of the things that we're trying to bring in that particular slide. And I think maybe during questions, if there are any, through you, Chairperson, I think my colleague, which is Joe Netate, can maybe elaborate a little bit more on terms of that particular program. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Thank you for RSR for the presentation. I think let's wait for the questions to come, and then I think let's let your colleague elaborate on that. We've been late on this meeting, unfortunately, because of ill discipline of members that also did not pitch. I want to first start with Honourable Vada by just saying glad to see you here and that your health is better, Honourable Vada. We really like to see you here.
and it's good to see your health is better. We really are glad to see you in good condition. I'm going to start off by members. Please, let's keep it with two questions per member and 2 minutes per question maximum. Please, we're running out of time already because of the late start. Thank you. We can take hands. Who wants to start? Right, we'll start off Honorable Magwebu, Honorable Mutumunye, Honorable Gerard Mtebe.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm trying to run you now, but it's just a couple of the issues I want to raise as a question. Slide number 5. Can you look at slide number 5? I see the findings there in the... And I'm worried when I look at that, Chairperson. You know, when you look at the AG findings, inadequate contract management, payments not made within 30 days, asset verification inadequately performed, fixed asset not complete, disposal of asset not supervised. Now I want to understand from your team CEO, what has been the problem from your own diagnosis, and moving forward, what are the interventions that you folks are putting in place? Because really, this issue bothers not only the supply chain management, but there have been implications on good governance as well. And they are worrying despite your unqualified findings. Quick picture question, I want to go to the issue of the accreditation of suppliers. Now, I know this is an industry that is probably, shall I say, for lack of a better word, technical. But when you are accrediting the suppliers, are you able to assist us to understand, the issue of local beneficiation? How do you assist, the ordinary man, the ordinary fellow, in the rural area where I come from, the ordinary man who may not be, rich to be, have the resources, given capacity so that he can become a supplier and be accredited? What endeavors are you doing to place to put them on the mainstream of the economy as well and to participate? And tied to that, on slide number 12, compliance, the compliance issue. Here, you are not clear what is the problem, because all you do is give us a statement that you couldn't achieve 100%, you achieved 50%. Be that as it may, you say the improvement directives were issued were closed due to operators being unable to implement the targeted improvement directives. Why were they unable? Why were they unable? And if so, what is it that you put in place to make sure the recurrence of this doesn't take place? We need to understand what is the problem. Don't just give us a statement. You must tell us why this target was not achieved. Badly so, because it was 100%, it went down to 50%. Surely we have a situation here. It didn't close. Lastly, Chair, I'm just breaking it down quickly. Please be patient. There are no sufficient time. On the youth development, on the youth development, are you able to perhaps, well, you've given us the figures, we see you doing your part, but are you able to break down the figures into provinces? We represent provinces, hence we are the National Council of Provinces. I want to know for each province, if you are able to give us the breakdown, given that we have 9 provinces, obviously. And lastly, on the issue of chief risk officer, on the issue of risk, I see here, this is my last procedure, page 28, you have imagine risk, you're talking about investigation of anonymous allegations, and you have labeled that as an imagine risk, in that you're worried about the situation. I'm not sure what you mean about that. Look, in my view, the investigation of anonymous allegations must be encouraged. We live in a country where we have high or serious levels of corruption. If people come forward to report these cases, we have to embrace those cases. We have to commit to resolve those cases. So if it becomes a risk, you are saying that it makes a risk, then I have a problem. In what way? the service. But you have a unit in your institution, in your entity, to look at these matters, or are you struggling with what? Why have you camped, or why are you labeling this as a risk? Actually, to me, it's a space that should assist you. Hence, we encourage that people must report that anonymously. So how could it be a risk? It's an opportunity. It's an opportunity to ensure that you strive for good governance, you are anti-corruption, you're anti-fraud, and you must work closely in collaboration with law enforcement agencies if you don't have internal officials there to deal with this matter as other institutions do.
Thank you, Honourable
Member. For that. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Mr. Meunier.
I note here you have broken the rule of two questions because that speaker.
Chairperson, the last time I saw I was the chair, can you go on, please?
That's the best stuff. Well, anyway, just welcome the... can we welcome the presentation from others? I take note of the fact that they appeared for the Commission for the first time this term. I was not here in the previous term, I don't know. But I would have loved to get a glimpse of their APPs so that I can be able to assess them based on the preset performance indicators. Maybe we should request by IUJ that we get a full document on the APPs so that we can understand what they are saying, even in the medium term, in terms of their national development plan, what is it that is their target. If I help you well, you said you specifically train drivers. And you correct me if I'm not correct. As MCOP, as members of parliament who are deployed in the MCOP, for lack of better way, we regard ourselves as regular ambassadors of provinces because we represent the interests of provinces. You will appreciate the fact that the railway is not that much a competence of the province. Therefore, we would love very much to get some statistics regarding the breakdown of your work you do in provinces so that we can appreciate what it is that you do and plan to do in provinces when we come in, especially the provinces that we represent. Those are my two questions that is in 2 minutes each, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mr. Meunier, Honorable Mtebe.
Thank you. Straight to the issue. See, oh, you said in your very own words that your probably responsibility is to ensure that you provide safe mode of transport to commuters. You would surely appreciate that. We are greatly missed as policymakers with measures that are going to ensure that this rail transport is safe in all the countries. Probably is one of the worst countries. But you stop short of saying what are the means and ways that are going to put in place to ensure that it is secured. On slide 28, and partly Honorable McGregor has touched on this, you know, it's a lost opportunity on your part, your representative, that you speak about the necessity to ensure that there are no procedural flaws. When you could have taken an opportunity to, because in my own view, procedural fairness is inherently part of the process. It's inherent in the process. This could have been an opportunity for you to express explicitly that your aim is to root out corruption, whether in a form of anonymous or that should have been an opportunity for you to do that. Because I don't understand how you emphasize procedural fairness. Because it's inherently part of the process. If you are going to embark on a process, it must be procedurally fair. That's it. That's what we expect from you. But we want to see a clear commitment on your part, not only to be procedurally fair, but to make sure that you root out corruption in whatever manifestation. And that's what I think the lost opportunity on your part. The issue of the recurring issue. Why do we have recurring issues? Yes. They come from 11 and you are now sitting with 1. But why do you have them here when they have been explicitly spelled out to you in in the form of a report. Why are they not rooted out? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Lawrence, first.
Thank you. Passenger safety on railways, I mean, if you're honest and you speak to any person that actually uses the trains at the moment, they'll say that things haven't really improved. And there's still the overcrowding that's taking place. There's the old stock, trains that keep on running late, theft that takes place of copper cables, and that has a massive knock-on effect. And we keep on talking about improving this, but it doesn't really improve. So my question is, what then are you doing to ensure that there is a real improvement? Because we went on a visit to Singapore a while back. They could actually come and tell us and say, listen, this month the trains were on average 4, 5, or 6 seconds late. If they improved the next month, they could say that was the improvement or the regression of it. But we cannot give that clear indication to our people on an ongoing basis, showing that we are actually making progress. That's the one thing that is the concern. Other than that, I just want to find out the directive that you issued to PRASA. And then contesting that and saying they cannot really follow that directive by operating trains manually. What is that situation now? If you can just answer that as well.
Is that all, Honourable Lawrence? Good. Honourable Rauda, I'll give you extra time.
Thank you. Just to understand why, you know, the key makers and all that. Thank you, Jefferson. Okay, really, two very brief comments. Eh? I want to comment you guys on your department on paperless. You mentioned that you've become paperless, and I think that's excellent in this day and age. You know, resources are being threatened all the time, reduced all the time. And whatever we do, we must utilize our resources as best we can. Vision and mission. I didn't see anything about vision and mission. So those are my two comments. My question now, again, is very brief, but thank you for the extra time check. Slide 24, the BEE, you said that, how you study out your resources, and I noticed that the percentage being spent on women, as well as the percentage being spent on the youth, is very, very small compared to what we're spending on the left of that screen, as you can see. I'm just wondering what is your department doing to improve on this and to ensure that the situation is going to be addressed, and we can especially on both the youth and the women, because we all know what it means to poverty alleviation. Then the other slide you can put up there, slide number 27, in which you've indicated that your risks are threatened or increased because of delays in finalizing finalizing and promulgating a regulation. What exactly does that mean, and in what way can members of the NCOP assist you in this regard? If there's something we can do from our side, please raise that issue with the necessary, and then we can assure that those risks are reduced. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Vada. From my side, I would just like to ask, I saw that Peraza got a 5 million rand penalty for the Boysen's train accident, which was faulty due to side signalling. I'd like to know, did they pay that? And then what other repercussions of account, because you have, if you're accountable for things, surely there must be repercussions, and this 5 million rand fine. What about the other repercussions, as Honourable Lawrence was also talking about the trains being worked manually, which you already warned them about? We want to know what is the actions that's been taken on that. And security, where does that fall in? As we see on a lot of trains, there's no security. I've just seen a disturbing video this morning on what they call train surfers, etc., because of a lack of security from my side. So you can please through decide who of your people will talk onto this and answer the questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I think I'll take a few of the questions, and I think my colleagues will come in to elaborate a bit more. One of the questions that honorable member has asked is around non-compliance or improvement directives that we had. To Plaza was one of the things we didn't achieve. What we call PTI, Platform Train Interface. In other words, that's upgrade of stations. So it's the stations not being upgraded on time to meet the improvement directive. So we issued a directive for them to improve, and then there's a bit of time in terms of issues of procurement, and I think we're all well aware about issues that Plaza has had around procurement, and making sure that they want to procure properly. So the food systems in place, utilizing treasury, and that has affected how long they took to be able to do some of these improvements. And that's really what that. So we took all of those into consideration, and we acknowledged that it was not Plaza's own doing, per se, and that's why we're raising it as a non-compliance. We acknowledge that they could have done it differently, but obviously the processes that were put in place around the processes that we're taking were longer than originally anticipated, and therefore they could not meet those requirements in terms of those upgrades of those stations to meet the necessary standards that we expected for them. And we've given them time, and we're obviously monitoring that to make sure that they're able to comply during the 17-18 financial year, or what we call their own semi-period. The issue of safety oversight, we as a regulator have a responsibility to provide oversight. Yes, we do that through issuing of licenses and ensuring compliance from operators. We also do understand that some of the challenges within the system are broader community challenges, and that's why we talked earlier about a regulation that we have been requesting DOT, which was published in June, around issue of railway reserve and security management. Because we can only be able to assist with the oversight when we have a legal instrument to be able to do that. So we acknowledge the challenges that are happening within the security system, within the Plaza trains, but obviously without a particular regulation or a legal instrument, it is very difficult for us to be ensuring that particular compliance. And I think I confirm to members that Plaza is, the DOT has published that, and I'm sure the minister very soon will sign it off, and that will then allow us to be able to request that particular compliance from Plaza and some of the operators. The issues of theft are related to the same, because if we're able to request that an operator, that if you take Caltrain as one example, that secures the railway reserve, then there would be very minimal theft of cables. Now, we can't do that. We can't force an operator now and say you need to do this because there's no legal requirement in place in relation to that. And that's why we talk about that particular regulation. The issue of manual operations of Plaza, the directive we issue to them, in terms of our processes, an inspector issues the directive. In other words, in terms of Section 43 of the RSR Act, any operator who feels aggrieved by the decision of the inspector can appeal to the chief executive officer. And then Section 44 requires them to appeal, if they're not happy with my decision, to appeal to the board. Now, that is still going through those particular internal processes. But it is, and Plaza has been issued with the 5 million rand penalty for non-compliance with that inspector directive. But that is going through the internal processes. And those processes normally take about 6 to 12 months before they actually concluded. And we're hoping that that will be concluded before the next review period in terms of their permit. But that issue will be taken into consideration when the review of their permit comes up in the next review period. I think the other question asked by honourable members was the issue that related to our vision, our mission. Our vision is about zero occurrence. We're saying every occurrence can be avoided. And that's the motto, that's the spirit which we approach each and every particular activity or each and every incident. Because each and every incident can be avoided. And that's why we've increased our capacity, honourable members, around our human factor capability. Because I think we're sitting with about close to 8 human factor specialists at the moment in our own employ, and we continue to improve and have a human centered approach to each and everything that we actually do within the organization. I think the other question was around issues. We do have a challenge with how long regulations do take and how long, and we do appreciate that there's a process. Obviously those are published by the minister, and DOT will obviously give us guidance in relation to that. And sometimes that process does take a bit long, not necessarily deliberately so, but because it's the nature of the process that there must be engagement. There is a process at this moment of the review of the Railway Safety Bill. And I think that's where members could probably assist in ensuring that whatever you're looking for, whatever you expect from the regulator in terms of what you want us to do as a regulator, there's a process DOT is going through at this moment, and I'm sure it will make its way to Parliament and for input so that the lawmakers can make and be able to be clear what exactly do they expect for us to do as a regulator in terms of the responsibilities that we have. We can only function as far as the law allows us to. So really, what happens then sometimes, we would want to do something, but if the law doesn't give us that particular authority to do that, then we obviously cannot do that. And that's what I would suggest. It's a much better way to be able to improve. The time is due. It is time for it to be reviewed, because the last time our act was amended, it was amended in 2008, and I think the situation, the environment has changed, and I think that is how I think members could probably be able to assist in attending to some of the issues that might be failing for members that we're not aware of, and they might want to put forward. In terms of split on our batteries or youth program, I think I can share that detail, honourable member, or we can have that. And I think I can share how that split is split into particular provinces and what types of activities we do in particular province. But I think I wanted to share that we have 5 regional offices. We've got Gauteng, which is Johannesburg, and it services Gauteng and Northwest. Then we have Mpumalanga, which is Nelspruit, it services Limpopo and Nelspruit. Then we have KZN in Durban. Then we have Port Elizabeth, which services the Eastern Cape and Free State, the southern part of Free State. Then we also have our office here in the Western Cape, which services the Western Cape and the Northern Cape. And that's how we split our operations and activities in relation to that. Maybe Moso can add some of the questions. The train surfing issue is just reminding me will be dealt with through our security issues. I think the real challenge that we do have is that a railway system is not, the current railway network system is an open system. It's not like your housing, which is a closed system. And that's why we have been crying for the past 2 years for the DOT to agree with us to put together a regulation so that we can protect the railway reserve. Once we do that, then we can even manage issues that relate to train surfing. What we do at this moment, though, we have our education and awareness program. We do education and awareness at schools. We fund school debates, we encourage, we work with schools so that we're able to, and we have those particular industrial theatre so that we're able to go to schools and be able to showcase that it's not cool to be able to do those things. And we do that through our education and awareness activities. But obviously, protecting the railway reserve from where we're sitting will go a long way in preventing and protecting and preventing some of the activities. And hopefully that regulation, once it's published, will give us the power to be able to enforce and ask operators to comply with it.
Thank you, sir.
I will deal with the finance-related and the risk-related question. On this slide 28, there were two questions from honorable members. One was that we missed an opportunity, actually, to confirm our commitment to rooting out corruption and following up on the allegations. The second one was in a similar vein, that why is it termed a risk rather than opportunity? We take those comments. I think that is a starting point of departure that we had. We just wanted to make sure in ensuring that commitment that the procedural aspects were met so that once the action is completed, there are no comebacks. But we take those two comments that we should rather maybe consider phrasing it as an opportunity rather to show our commitment towards those areas of routine on corruption. In terms of the audit issue, there was a question on slide 5 as to why are there occurrences of the audit issue. As, members are correct in saying that we should not have any audit issue. The one that was actually the occurrence is the one that related to non-payment of suppliers within 30 days. And that is specifically linked to our cash flow. The root cause of that is that at times we don't have the necessary cash to pay within 30 days. That's why it is a strategic risk that has got specific attention through the Audit and Risk Committee on a quarterly basis to ensure that our cash reserves are up to scratch. And once we have them consistently over the 12-month period, we'll be able to deal with that one recurring issue about payments within 30 days. The other 10 findings is a commitment from our side to deal with those findings. We've already submitted an action plan submitting through the Audit and Risk Committee to the board on how we will deal with all 10 of those findings and make sure that there's no reoccurrence of the 10 and that there's no new finding for the 17-18 financial year. There was a question about has Prasa paid the 5 million rand penalty? The CEO talked about the lengthy processes. So at this point, no, because it's still in the processes themselves that he indicated take 6 to 12 months. So when their permit comes up for review in the next cycle, it will be one thing we look at as to whether has that penalty been paid or not. Then there were questions on the DEE spend on the youth and the woman that is far lower than the rest of the spend. We do acknowledge that. That is true. I think a root cause of that is when you look at our procurement spend itself, it's a lot on the technical engineering-related fields. And I think that's part of the reason why it's not skewed correctly. But it is something we have noted. It's something we are working towards. And hopefully when we do return in the 17-18 year, we'll show an improvement in that regard. I think that covers it.
Just to add, if I may, members, the issue of non-payment of suppliers within 30 days is a timing issue. 75% of our revenue is from exchange transactions, and which means we collect the money from operators. We engage and we get that particular revenue. But we also don't have, DOT is not approved at the stage for us to have any overdraft. So it becomes a timing issue. It's not necessarily that you don't have, but when you get the money and when you're actually able to do that. And that's something I think that the board has raised with the minister and with the department, and I'm sure at a particular point in time we'll be able to, it needs obviously the Minister of Finance to be approved if they that route, but one of the things that we have also put in place as an organization is what we call a cash flow strategy. How do we attend to our cash flow issue and make sure that that particular situation doesn't arise? And that's something that the board on a quarterly basis requires us to be able to submit and make sure that we're able to attend to those particular issues. And that's something that's getting the attention from the board itself, and we all are aware of it, and we obviously try to manage it, but it's more of a timing issue more than anything. Joe?
Yes, I may. Just also, I, as a board member, also sit on the Audit and Risk Committee. And we have taken this issue of cash flow seriously, simply because the way the permits were structured, payment was only due later on in the year. So we always had months where we couldn't, we had to try and raise cash. The CEO has negotiated with the operators now to spread that over the year. So part of the corrective measures in terms of our cash flow was to spread the income stream rather than have it in lump sums. inappropriate times. The second aspect, which I think the committee should note, is that during the period under review, most of that period we had acting CFO. We now have a permanent CFO, and we're already seeing a lot of improvement, and we expect that as we look back on the current year, that you will see a very pleasing picture. Thanks, Chair.
I think my colleagues have covered all of the other questions. I'll only touch on the local beneficiation that was asked by Ms. Mutin. What we have initiated a project where we say the rail industry imports a lot of components into the country. And the small manufacturers that that want to enter the industry, either they don't have the engineering expertise to be able to supply the quality that the industry needs. So that becomes it holds us back to be able to supply to the industry. So the last slide that we made in the presentation to say, what role can we as a regulator play? Because we know about this project as a concept phase. So the discussion that we have with the industry or the operators is to say, you plan to have 70% localization in this component. How are we going to achieve that? How do we assist those small operators that you want to enter the industry to be able to supply the quality that you need as an operator? So the way we're going to achieve that is to say, we can assist the SMEs to say, we will assist you throughout the R&D process until the companies that are going to supply will be the quality that the industry needs. The chief mentioned about partnering with UPs and higher education institutions for them to assist the SME, who in most cases you will find that the small operator is not even an engineer. It's somebody who just wants, is a business person, but they don't know what steps they need to follow for them to supply the industry with the right quality. So that is the role that we're going to play as a regulator to assist the small operator.
If I can just add there, Chair, I think it goes to the point of stopping state itself to local content. Because as it stands at the moment, yes, we have an intention as government to have 50% local content, but we can tell you as a regulator it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen not because we don't want it, it's not required to happen, but because of the safety standards, the standards at which we expect the safety levels of some of those particular components. And we are the ones who are setting those standards, and therefore we are saying we are better placed in cooperation with SAPS and SANA to be able to ensure that we open that opportunity to be able to do that. And that's the discussion that we've had. We have an MOU with SAPS and we have an MOU with SANA. And that's the space within which we're saying we can be able to play, obviously, if we are allowed to do that. And I think that's something that is very important, that when you look at the field, if you are allowed to do something, if you do it as a by-the-way, then it's something else. But if the Act of Parliament says that this is what you're supposed to do, or whoever, doesn't necessarily have to be us, the fact, but any of the other needs to be given to someone to be able to be performed, so that we're able to partner with those to be able to achieve that. And that's really, for us, something we're looking at with DTI, to be able to see how we can assist with their black industrialists within the railway sector, and how we can support that program that they actually have.
Thank you. I would like to know, is there any members that have not been answered, or that needs to have a short follow-up?
Yes.
Honourable Magwebe, I'm going to give you a last snap at this quickly.
Yes. Thank you, I appreciate that. Look, I really appreciate, you know, this engagement, but I think, you know, we are in this together, so we have to really, you know, find one another in the interest of the country. You see, the problem it has with this issue of overdraft, through you, Chair, I would want the CEO to share with us, you know, and send correspondence, if it was in writing, your endeavors, you know, to deal with this cash flow as, you know, a challenge. Guru was just indicated that now you are close to the Department of Transport. I know we are waking up to another midnight cabinet reshuffle, but the Minister of Transport has not been reshuffled. I've just looked and now he's still there. So despite others have been exited this morning, but we are getting used to that nonsense. But be that as it may, I want to know the correspondence that you have sent to the Department of Transport.
Honourable Magwebe, just hold on quickly. Yes, Honourable George?
Oh, of course, the word nonsense is unparliamentary.
Honourable Member, at this stage, I don't think it was meant in a way to actually badmouth anyone by saying nonsense. Honourable Magwebe, please use a language that better describes it and not take on like the department on like that.
Yes, if there is any purpose of time, I would leave that a little bit afraid, but it's just 7 English, we can't hold it. CEO, assist us as a committee. Give us correspondence that we have requested by the transport and we requested overdraft, because we want to follow up with the Department of Transport with the minister and hold him accountable. Why? What is the problem that he cannot assist you? Because this kind of problem, you know, impacts, you know, it's got a spiraling effect and serious repercussions to the emerging black. You know, because if they don't pay in 30 days, their business is at risk of closure. I'm sure you understand that. That's the first one. The last one is a follow-up chat, will be the issue of the action plan. From the other body findings, they said you could have a plan. We want you to share that with the committee through the chat, your action plan, so that we could see, you know, in detail the intervention you think to put in place to avoid the recurrence and to address all these other findings that in your presentation. All
the thank you. Well, thank you, Honourable. Can you just give a very brief?
Yes. So that the members don't leave here with the impression that this finding that we have here are of such a nature. The other finding was just two chairs that AG could not find. So yes, we do appreciate that it is something we don't have assets within the region. And I think I said that we're intellectually driven, we have our intellectual capital. So I think when we share the plan, you will see exactly the detail of each and every one of these particular findings. But they're not things, that's why you don't see them recurred. They're not things that we cannot handle within a 6 to 12 month period. And therefore, I just wanted to give that assurance to the members that we have those under control and we will obviously be able to attend to those. I've noted the other comments that the Honourable Member has said, and I think that's what I need to say to you, Chair. Thank you.
Yeah. Sorry, yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Mukhtar Mwaduleke from the Department of Transport. I'm responsible for the account of the railway sector regulator at the department. I want to clarify the issues on the overdraft. It's an administrative matter. It is not a legislative or a regulative matter. Why we are saying that there are rules that have been done by government. They cannot be changed overnight. RFR didn't have proper people that were managing the finances. You had the board member indicating that they have just appointed the CFO. Let's allow the current CFO to comply with the law. And some of the things that the honorable members are asking me to resolve. Because the issue is not the refusal for overdraft based on the fact that there is a problem in the legislation. It's an administrative matter which needs a CFO to be in place and do the correction. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I'm just going to, on closing remarks, want to say if there's anything else from any of RSR's comments, anything you want to add?
Just to clarify,
Nothing at this stage. Okay. Then I would like to thank the regulator for the presentation. I think it's been very enlightening. I would like to see that you really act vigorously. And we've heard here that it was saying it's taking time, especially like on the 5 million. I cannot see that it can be so much time. I really believe that, that you should put time limits on that. From my side, I believe that we would like to see cut-off dates on time limits. Otherwise, it can take years. We have to have certain time frames on this. And then, yes, we would like to also just appreciate the role that you play as RSR. And thank you. We hope to see you still in before the end of this term, because I've not been on the committee on the previous term. But we really hope to see you again before the end of this term, and we must ask the Secretary if there is time, maybe in the next year and a half, because we know we've got a lot of entities coming to us. But I think then we can perhaps just hear how far you have become, especially like on the surfing, on the trains, etc., and what actions have been taken. Thank you from my side. You can stay for the next presentation if you would like to. I'm also going to ask that we go on to the next presentation. I know if there should be a small 10-minute break, but I would or 5-minute break, but I would like to know from members if it's okay with you if we go straight on to the next presentation. We've lost a lot of time so far. The Secretary is telling me that she's got lunch available. According to the program, this program should go on to 14:30, but as you well know, we've got a sitting this afternoon. So I would like to also ask the next Department of the Road Traffic Management Corporation, RTMC, to please let's stay with the 30 minutes. Let us see how we can get through it. We must do justice to these presentations. We're not just here to rush through it, but let's also see that we don't deliberate too much on it. Thank you. So your department is relieved if you want to. Thank you so much. Yes, perhaps, members, you can just get something quickly just to, if you want a tea or coffee, just to come and sit again. Our secretary just needs to be relieved for a few seconds. Thank you. Yes, quickly. I don't know. Where's the class this time? Because I don't know.
If you look at it, you
need
to your right, you need to get.
Okay. Thank you, members, and everyone, for giving some of the people time to quickly have a brief time off. I would like to start and know, are you guys ready here at RTMC? Are you ready for your presentation on the briefing on our annual report?
Yes,
I'm going to give over to you immediately. That we don't consume any time. You've got 30 minutes. I'm going to time you, please. See that all your personnel, also all the divisions, give everything in that time, and then I will give it over to the members for 30 minutes of questioning. I'm not going to limit them on questions, but I would like the members, please, to stick with approximately two, maximum three questions. Please, Honorable Mutimunye, I know you took me on that, so please let's stay on the two to three questions. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Member, Chair. My name is Zawala Najab. I am the Chairman of the Road Traffic Management Corporation. And for the record, Chair, when you started the meeting, you mentioned that we are not here yet. I was here together with other board members. We were just waiting for officials, but we nevertheless are grateful for affording us an opportunity for me to have a phone call. Might I then start off by introducing the delegation, which will then assist us in ensuring that we subject ourselves to the oversight that is necessary. So my immediate right is Advocate Makosi Mncibi, who is our Chief Executive Officer. I'm also accompanied by Ms. Nkicho Lingana, who is the Executive of National Traffic Police. Kevin Karavala, who is our IT Executive. Skivita Sepeze, the Company Secretary. Liana Molman, the CFO. As well as CDC Juma, from Strategy and Reporting. I would have liked to have kept our team small, but because we do not engage with this committee often, I thought for the sake of transparency, let's bring just about the board to assist us in talking to these issues. Just a brief overview and a comment, and then I'll hand over to the CEO and the executives, but just to contextualize how we propose to deal with this annual report and set the tone. I think, pardon me for stating the obvious, but I need to mention the type of animal that we are dealing with. And you will then begin to appreciate that it is slightly conceived differently from a legislative point of view. And some of the challenges will become inherent, but I thought you needed to have that appreciation. The RTMC is probably one and only entity of government that is owned by a different shareholder. Usually SOEs have got the minister as the shareholder. The RTMC has 9 provincial MECs who are responsible for traffic or transport and related matters, plus a representative of FALGA to take into account the elements of the municipalities. So in terms of our shareholding, we report to 9 provincial MECs together with the minister and the deputy minister and a representative of FALGA in terms of the act. The RTMC Act was conceived in 1999 and it has not been amended since. But RTMC as an entity itself started its operations in 2005. And there were a whole host of challenges which resulted in it not having a board. So strictly speaking, we are the first fully functional board of the RTMC after Parliament had taken a decision to disestablish it on at least 3 occasions. When we were appointed for the last four of the times, we started in 2014-15. We are coming before you on the back of just having accounted to our shareholder, which is both 9 MECs, Salga, and the 2 ministers. Our AGM was on the 21st of September, at which this signal report says and was subjected to whatever scrutiny that it had to go through. Over and above that, there is also an animal that was created purely out of necessity to ensure that in between, because you can imagine, trying to get 9 entities and a minister under one roof proved to be a challenge. And that is what led to lapses of oversight and administrative accountability in the past, because you had the CEO who was at large, not subjected to any form of oversight. And when things go off, then the CEO forgetting that in our way different heads, we as people are supposed to provide oversight, we are not doing that. Now, it was part of our shareholder compact with the minister to say, if this is to work, we've got to have a mechanism that enables us to meet in between your agreements or wherever the shareholders are available, because all the authority and the decision-making process was withheld by the minister until we demonstrate that we are equal to the task. And then when we prove our mettle, then the 10 rights and functions get delegated to us. The department through the ministry created a body that is called the task team, which is basically 3 provincial MECs with full delegated authority on behalf of the shareholder to ensure that the decision-making processes, you know, do take place and do take place quickly. To give you a bird's-eye view of our trajectory, in 2014-15, when we started, we were appointed in December to take office in January 2015, and the end of the financial year was 2 months later. So in that particular year, we had a qualified audit with all manner of problems. We accepted the responsibility because we have accepted our same title, no excuses there. But in the past subsequent years, we've had unqualified audits. In the very last year, about which we reported to the AGM, we had a clean, unqualified and clean. And in fact, we gained an award from Treasury. But that is not to say that there are no problems and there's no room for improvement. So I needed to paint that background so that members appreciate where we are coming from. And that is why we take subjecting ourselves to oversight is very important, because through you, we also get to take criticism and go back and correct the things that we might not get right. Lastly, it is an issue about which you probably read in the media. And the entire edifice of our existence in terms of our mandate to reduce road fatalities and road crimes, period. But everything that is to enable us as a collective with yourself to achieve that is based, one, on our legislative capabilities or lack thereof, but two, it is based on the platform called eNative. Now, that particular capability is the one that will ensure that if you talk ARTO, it gets implemented through that capability. If you talk law enforcement and tracking everything else that everybody talks about and doing is based on that platform. historically, that function was handled on behalf of the department by a private company called Tasima. Now, for reasons that will require a separate session, that contract came to an end and it kept on being extended and extended until people got entrenched to the point where cabinet resolved about 3 years ago that that function must come back to the RKMC, which is where it belongs in terms of the legislation. Now, that process has taken most of our time and resources in that we spend literally every month in court trying to have that contract set aside so that the function comes back. You don't need to be a rocket scientist. If people spend to make 40 million a month and you as a department do it at 8 million a month, those people are not going to roll over and just hand it back. It resulted in us litigating all the way to the Constitutional Court. As I'm talking to you now, the Constitutional Court has made a decision in November last year that says the function must go back to that place where it belongs. Up until today, we went back to the Constitutional Court again because there is resistance by that company. We are dealing with that, but it is something that you need to have an appreciation of because you will then see when you go to the nuts and bolts how the full non-transference of the function impacts negatively on the job that we are about to do. But obviously, for the sake of transparency, thinking on my feet, I direct management to prepare a short synopsis that traces the chronology and the history of this court battles so that members can look at it, and if there's a need for us to engage again in future, we can then provide the necessary clarity. But it is something that has a direct bearing on what we do and how best we could be doing what we are supposed to be doing. Having said that, Chair, through you, a lot of the engagement I think I can foresee will come by way of questions because then we can then amplify better. Let me not take much of the time and hand over to the CEO to then take you through the actual presentation. But I would be remiss in my duty if I do not recognize the fact that by December last year, the committee, the term of office of the board which I chaired, came to an end. And we were reappointed, I was lucky enough to be retained. So the credit for the clean audit in large measure also goes to those members who were retired and not retained. And I think it's only decent that we recognize them. We only left two months to the year end, and I thought as the chair I needed to salute to them, as well as the previous minister that we got, and we also managed to achieve what we did. And I thought it's fair that we make those acknowledgements, even though they are mentioned in the presentation itself. May I then hand over to my CEO.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, as well as honorable members, will just move directly to the presentation.
Chair, will only cover the scope of the four areas that we requested to deal with in this matter. The chairperson has already alluded in his closing remarks of the term of office that has come to an end, and the three members that we have shown up there replaced the three members that were never appointed amongst others, Professor Marini Matele, as well as Mr. Tani Tansi, as well as Dr. Eddie. The three in their own capacity possess a speciality in particular to the IT, Professor Matele, who is a veteran at the TUT, deals with the IT. Mr. Tani Tansi is one of the experts in relation to human capital, and Dr. Edithebe has his own skills within the traffic and law enforcement. And these are the three members that we never retained. However, Mr. Paul Browning still serves within the law enforcement review committee, so he's not completely lost from our environment. This is the full complement of the board that we have, but under his stewardship, we still performing. It was in
indicate the number of appearances that we have to the portfolio committee as well as the board meetings and the audit and the risk. This is only to amplify the fact that all the committee structures are well up and running and very functional. This is the governance of the RTMC. As the chair has alluded, that you are a different animal because you are the only entity that has the shareholder committee as well as the board. So we account both to the shareholder as well as the board. And then we have four committees that are dealing with oversight and regulatory of the committee, being the audit and the risk committee, strategy and monitoring committee, enumeration committee, social and ethics committee. This is the third complement that we have in terms of the executives, comparison of four females and three males at the helm of the management of the core of the organization. This, therefore, deals with our strategic trajectory until 2020. Key to it, as the chair has alluded, is the fact of to promote and create a safer road environment, integrate and coordinate the road safety and traffic matters, leverage funding, and create dynamic transformation. Perhaps it might be important that we deal with the issue of leveraging of the fund, particularly informed by Section 24 of the RTMC Act as well as Section 48. In particular, we are not fully funded by government. Government only funds us to 24% of the entire operation of the organization. We rely solely on the transactional fees as well as the investments that we need to make the corporation functional. What do we mean by the transactional fees? These are the fees that we pay when we renew our licenses or the roadworthiness of our vehicles. That carries the larger share of the corporation. We have 10 functional areas. One of the functional areas was then given to Arctia, which is related to Arctia. We are left with the 9 functional areas. Out of the 9, we have been given 5 to deal with. There are still 4 functional areas that have been withheld by the shareholder, in particular informed by the fact that part of those functional areas are part of Schedule 4 and Schedule 5 on the concurrent function. Competence of all the provinces national. To that extent, it relates to the driver licensing, it relates to the roadworthiness and testing of the vehicles. They are still being withheld by the department. Our performance, we have seen a slight, to date, we have seen a slight decrease. The previous year, our performance was at 92. This current year, the year under review, we were at 79%. Why did we not achieve the same 92 we have gone out and achieved 100%? There were 6 areas that could not be achieved, particularly in the National Road Traffic Law Enforcement Code, which is parental in terms of the RTMC Act, but by the wisdom of the shareholder, it was decided that we should not deal with the code in isolation, but deal with the review committee following the process that was followed by defense to ensure that we are all encompassing in putting the known standards of the traffic law enforcement, informed by the fact that you're dealing with two environments, both given credence by the Constitution in terms of Schedule 4 as well as Schedule 5. So therefore, it became very imperative that what we're dealing with is in tandem with the Constitution. So the development or the appointment of the National Traffic Law Review Committee also took some time before it came to the fore, so hence the delay in dealing with this matter. But the other issue in rolling out the issue of the National Road Safety Strategy depended entirely on Cabinet having to approve the National Road Safety Strategy, which was subsequently approved by Cabinet in March 2017. So that on its own placed a limitation on the rollout. One of the issues was also the issue that targeted the youth because it was embedded within the rolling out of the National Road Safety Strategy.
invariably it has also to be debated simply because of the approval of the National Road Safety Strategy. The key one was also the issue of the training of the traffic officers, the 1,000 traffic officers. Now, most of the people who not understand what is the delay in the training of the traffic officers. The current situation and the prevailing situation of the traffic officers is an NQF level 4, which is equivalent to grade 12. So we're moving away from that point to an NQF level 6, which therefore makes the traffic officer to possess a diploma that is recognized by the higher institution, which is a 3-year qualification. That on its own then took time to deal with the composition of the material that is accredited by both tertiary, in particular to be accredited by UNESA, TUT, as part as well as the technical. So it took a lot of time to do that. But also, the facility to train 1,000 at the goal also proved to be an impediment simply because we rely solely on using the facilities that were previously provided by the defense. And members will therefore recall that there was a facility that was used by the defense, particularly the Linnaeusia defense facility, which subsequently was declared to be unhealthy and not user-friendly and usable simply because of the Dolomites situation. So that also on its own put a spanner in the works. And also the research that was, the research was completed, but it was never published on time. So we're very candid to not to claim it because though we have conducted the road safety research, but the publication there too was delayed. That was the issue that then made the fix not to be achievable. I have also dealt with this matter on what we have achieved against the APP. We've been fighting ourselves against the APP. But also it was very important that we then begin to deal with the very critical aspects of the APP, which particularly dealt in terms with the youth, because in terms of our statistics, it is the youth that is more affected in terms of the road carnages as well as the school debate. These are the enforcement that we have dealt with, but it is important to highlight the fact of the integration of the traffic law enforcement between the road traffic management as well as CBRTA. CBRT had two components, so we needed to integrate the traffic inspectorate from the CBRTA to the to the RTMC. We're dealing with fraud very decisively, which is a cancer that is causing so many challenges on our road, particularly the problem. The acquisition of the driver license is posing a very serious challenge because it's dominated by fraud. The acquisition of the roadworthy certificate at all levels is dominated by fraud, both from the traffic law enforcement, the public, as well as the administrative arm. We're quite happy that we're doing well because just last week we also confirmed the sentencing of the 3 traffic officers from those that were arrested. Those were not yet happy in terms of the sentence because they were given 5 years, however the 5 years were suspended. When we are then saying that this corruption causes this government pay yet in terms of the road traffic carnages, it causes this country $142 billion per year. And this is a study that was conducted with CFAR, so it therefore begins to tell us that we can say the law if we really deal with the issue of the law enforcement and the traffic that we're dealing with it through our office in Tarko. Well, the road safety strategy is going to be an intervention that we're beginning to say that as part of the United Decade of Action, we have undertaken as a country that we are going to reduce the road carnage by 50%. 50% spending from 2010 when our road fatality was 14,732. We then undertook that by 2020 we would have reduced that fatality to half, which would have been the 7,000 fatalities. Not
saying that the 7,000 is the norm and acceptable standard. We're saying one day is a day too many, but we're then saying coming from where we were, we needed to reduce these numbers, which have finally been extended to be aligned with the NDP to the 2030, that we should then show sure that we then reduce those challenges. These are the pillars that we're dealing with as a roadmap management. I've already dealt with the issue of the underperformance because of the question of time, and I'll just pass through into it. But what is very important in also in terms of the review committee, as I said, which is preemptive in terms of the 18 of the road traffic of the national road traffic act, to then ensure that we have this national the issue of us having to have a code. What is this code? And that's where the problem lies. The code is intended to align, because we have two spheres. We have the national, provincial, and the municipalities. How we regulate the traffic law enforcement is different from one phase to the other. For example, you will find a traffic officer resigning from the provincial government because of corruption, but he gets employed at the municipality, and vice versa. Because we don't have these norms and standards and the registration of all those traffic officers, they crisscross the country without any trace in relation to their previous behaviors. And as the chair has said, at the time when we came to the fall in 2014, the RTMC was at the brink of collapse. At that time, we had 371 employees, which we have now increased to double the figure to 609, having had some of the people that have resigned and those that have died. We're sitting at 609. That on its own also then deals with the issue of the capacity and the funding. If you are transactional fees, which are the greatest amount that begins to support the operations of the RTMC, when we are 371, the same amount still accounts for 609. It's one of the issues that you must be dealing with. This is the audit committee report. As the chairperson has said, we had a clean report and qualified and clean report in relation to our operation, taking into account that in 2013-14 we have a qualified report to this level. We have no other issues that relate to the method of emphasis that we're supposed to be dealing with. Well, in relation to the risk, we emphasize this risk in relation to our own area of operation, particularly the lack of stakeholder coordination became one of the risks that we have related, because as we have said that we are a very different animal. We seek synergy between national, provincial, as well as the municipality. The issue of the NQF level 6 also became a risk simply because what used to happen in the fraternity, a law enforcer, a traffic officer who has a diploma, which diploma is an NQF level 4, equivalent to grade 12, became a lecturer to lecture other issues. So when they're taking it to the NQF level 6, we require people with a degree and plus to be lecturers to ensure that this qualification is there in the proper perspectives. We identify them as risk because of the previous issues. I've dealt with the issue of fraud and corruption, which is cancerous in our environment. Chair, for a better pleading, let me indicate so that the members will understand why this stage of corruption becomes so cancerous within our environment. Ordinarily, if the traffic officer is running the driving school, I'm selling a driver's license at about 4,500 per person and testing 8 people per day. It has shown us that some of the people are making per day not less than 25,000 out of fraud and corruption on a daily basis, which takes you to 125,000, taking you to 525,000 per month, tax-free, and all that. So it's very lucrative deal that they're beginning to deal with. That's why we are now intensifying our efforts in relation to this area that relates to to this corruption.
ensure that we position ourselves in the composition of our anti-corruption unit, composing of members that we recruited from the national intelligence, from the crime prevention, as well as staff, so that we also have both competent operations in identifying this, because we're dealing with syndicates. For instance, if I have to amplify this, you go to Belfast. In Belfast today, what used to happen in Belfast, you'll find that all the people that came from Ethiopia, where their driver's license were converted and given driver's licenses without appearing. So people will collate from each all provinces going to Belfast on a daily basis, and one application used to pay a 10,000. So on Tuesday and Thursday, the traffic officer who's dealing with this matter makes a 100,000. But you have all these people that are driving on our roads that don't understand the rules in the country, bypassing the driver's licenses that are floating them, but obtained legitimately in a particular area without themselves presenting themselves. As of yesterday, we also then alerted of the same operation within the Western Cape. I will not indicate the place where it is. It has become more cancerous, where people are now converting, getting these driver's licenses without having even set a foot at the testing station. But also the other element of the corruption that we're facing within the driver licensing situation, you then find that by the standards and the registration, we are not allowed as a facilitator within where students are writing the learner's licenses to have any other aid or assisting process. So we have seen them developing using a pointer. You'll find that as the facilitator is moving around the traffic officer, he points with a pointer, or he clicks the pen. If the answer is A, it's 1. If it's B, it's A. So these people that are coordinated understand. And normally, they are expected to take 45 minutes, if they are very intelligent, to write a learner's license. But those people pass this within 8 minutes, because they are then assisted without reading this letter. So it's an issue that is throughout the country. It's within the staff. We're still going to be arresting some of the people in staff, as well as the defense, that have also participated in getting these driver's licenses in terms of this, of this assistance and the corruption that is in our areas. Chair, I will present a financial statement as they stand. As I alluded, that is the composition of our financial, of our revenue dependent solely in terms of Section 24 from the transversal fees as well as the government grant. We're getting the government grant on a quarterly basis, which is 49 million, so per annum we're getting 198 million from the department, which is just a drop in the ocean in relation to our operation. Chair, this is the spread of our budget that we have in the past and the performance. And allow me, Chair, as I close, to then begin to amplify the issue that the chairperson has spoken to. We have been having the core of our function is the e-native. We have been having this core since 2001. That system has never been upgraded. Yet we have been having a service provider that we're paying 40 million per annum without upgrading this per month, 40 million per month, without upgrading the system that relates, which is a national key point in relation to the driver's license. That's why we are also then saying that the time has come that we deal with the improvement of services in the provinces. We are at the correct platform. If you go to the DLTC in the provinces, you see the queues. And the queues are meant to ensure that they begin to spearhead and initiate corruption. So we cannot even deal with the improvement service standards, because ours to them say, if I go to the DLTC, either to register my vehicle or to apply for a learner for a test or a driver's license, how many minutes might I spend at the DLTC, and what is the other issue that we're dealing with? For instance, we're now coming with an issue that begins to give. Why don't we deal with the e-licensing, where a person will go to the system rather than going to the standing in the queue, long queues, to apply for a registration of their vehicle as well as the driver's license from home. That's what we're announcing. But that system, which we have been paying 14 billion per month, has never been compatible to the trajectory of the current IT that we're dealing with. So that is a huge challenge that we need to deal with the system and upgrade the system to ensure that we're compatible with other standards. Chair, I want to end up here. I've deal with only four so that I have their 30 minutes. The issue that deals with what is also challenging us is the implementation of the 24/7 law enforcement. Record, in the country, most of our traffic officers are employed in terms of the Public Service Act. So in terms of the Public Service Act, they are working from any 8 hours, beyond any hour, 8 hours is overtime. So most of the time when accidents are happening, we don't have law enforcement. The accidents are happening between 8 o'clock and 4 o'clock. You don't have traffic officers because they have to claim overtime. Saturday and Sunday, it's overtime. Double the amount. So this 24/7 law enforcement process is what we're engaging with DPSA, changing the conditions of the service of the traffic officers so that they should be working the same process that the police are dealing with, and also the harmonization of the legislation. The chairperson has dealt with the issue of the inmates. We are now called habitual litigants by the court because there is no month that goes by that we are not in court with these inmates people trying to claim and reclaiming this system from government, where they are against, despite the number of court orders, the plethora of court orders against them, they appeal from time to time. We're sitting on Friday, we're in the last in the labor court. When we got the leave to appeal on Monday yesterday, they approached the court on agent basis to appeal the decision of the labor court. So it has become a vicious circle with them, ensuring that they can have a hold on this inmates. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you for the report and for the presentation. Just to the chairperson, Chair, we did see that you were here. It was not aimed upon you that you were not on time yet. Just to put the record straight on that, it's unfortunate that there's members that were not here. I'm going to go straight over to the questions. I first want to ask, please members, can we keep it short and direct to the point? I don't want us to start elaborating and start our own new presentation here. Please, so if we can have it by two questions. If there's a third, I'm going to give you a second round if time gives us permission on that. So please, guys, shoot off, and who wants to go first? Honorable Ngwebu, Honorable Gerald Ntebe, Honorable Launt. Okay, we'll go from there.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, colleagues from the Rotary Transport Management Corporation. Two questions. One, on the issue of road safety, the other one on fraud and corruption. I just want to know, you know, I live in this London, and what I've observed, it happens in many other provinces as well, the issue of road safety, that our national roads are not properly fenced. The animals and the people dying every day crossing the road in the rural areas. For instance, by way of example, I live in London, I drive sometimes and can't. You see stray animals, goats, dogs and what. That's your take. How do you think propose to deal with this case? Because our road cannot be safe until that address those issues as well. I'm not sure if it is in fact that in the road and what is it, the strategy, the road strategy. I haven't read that piece promulgated in March 2017. I haven't read that. So I wanted to comment. Secondly, on fraud and corruption. I wanted to find out, you know, do you have a strategy on fraud and corruption, or are you just working with the police to deal with this issue? And, you know, as we have said, advocate, you know, the issue is huge. So, it's a really serious matter that we need to nip it in the bud and deal with it effectively. Your effectiveness, I would, really want to see you guys growing in terms of having your own team that is, going to start with the qualifications, but you must have a strategy in place. I wanted to see how are you going to defend that, or how would you stand in that space? Thank you, sir.
Thank you for that short version. Honorable Ntebe, I hope you do the same.
No, Chair, I think a level of comfort
coming from the fact that we know that we have the Cape of Report. But I don't want to zoom straight and say your caution check to question. Why do we have 9% over faith? And why do we say it is not in any way temporary on the MVP and the goals that we have for ourselves? Secondly, you know, this we are in a constitutional democracy that okay, chair of the body. And the final arbiters of legality in this country are courts. Am I correct to assume that the matter between yourselves and Inner Chief was before the Constitutional Court and the Honorable Minister? If so, what is this litigation process that is unending? Because to my recollection, the Constitutional Court is the final layer of legality in this country. What is this thing that will keep on going? We are not all, you're no longer in the Constitutional Court, now you're in Labour Court. What is this thing that can't find? Because you can't have, like you said, advocate, you're now perpetually in the litigation process. We need to come to finality. The last probably question that I want to speak on is, you know, and I'm happy that during your final conclusion of your presentation, you spoke to the issues of going, what do we call this, online application. It supplements and corrects it to our fourth industrial revolution ambition. And we think that's where we need to go. Because I can tell you now, other countries, particularly your Asian tigers, are beginning to test their driverless cars. One of the biggest manufacturers probably in the country now is also testing their driverless cars. And we are still stuck as a developing country into your manual process, which we know and we assume that it's corruption riddled. But what is it that you are doing? I mean, if you need to tell me that I need to leave the comfort of my house, go stay in a queue, I can tell you I come from the rural part of this country, in the northwest. At one stage we even had people, because we share border with Gauteng, traveling from Gauteng to go and queue in the northwest, just so that they can have access to appointments. And this thing we are not probably going into that space so that we can be able to resolve it. And lastly, Chair, through your permission, I think, as I said, the issue of vitality is a societal issue. You can bring as much as legislative framework as you want. If we are not going to be able to change the pattern, the behavioral pattern, we are not going to win. But please, if you look into legislative changes and whatever that you are talking as part of your APP, don't cause that. Go into universities, take young people who are capable there, allow them to have their space into that sector, that they can recommend to the board what is it that they can do. So that we don't spend our money into consultancy fees when we can have young people capacitated in the same process, but also allow them to stimulate their growth.
Thank you, Honorable Tebe. Is there some other member that wants a bite before we go? Honorable George?
Thank you, Chair. The one question from my side. The perception, the public perception, has it that in the main, road accidents in our country are coming from your taxi leaders. Is that scientific? And you understand it, if you can please share that with us. And also to use the way that you use the Babateko, that they are also habitual drivers. I've been interested in them myself, but I'm not sure if in the main it's better than them or not. The second issue is the issue in the media about the increase of motor vehicle licenses. Please educate us if the increase is scientific, and also the amount in which the minister
too much or too less, justify the amount for us if that's still space.
Thank you, Honorable Mr. Munier. Honorable Long.
And one of the biggest problems serving here in the NGOP is that we have 9 ministries that this elected committee has to look after. And in every ministry, there's so many entities that fall under that. And this is one chairperson that I believe we should have more regular engagements with compared to some of the others that we see more often. But we do not, it doesn't have a direct influence on us as members representing different provinces. I'll get back to that point at the end. Every year, when it's the festive seasons, there's a lot of focus on road safety. And everybody pays extra attention, and the road deaths get communicated via all media on a constant basis. But the problem is we sit with this throughout the year, the problem of the road deaths, and we are somehow missing a trick or two that we are not decreasing it the way it should. I mean, we've got percentage-wise one of the highest death rates in the world, which is a massive concern. And that is where I actually want to engage this entity on how we are actually improving it, so that we can say, listen, for instance, let's take the corruption thing. A small thing by ensuring that every single traffic cop has a camera in the vehicle or in front of the motorbike, and that all interactions take place so that you can catch it on the camera, should already be a massive deterrent. So that's something that I want to engage with and say, listen, have you thought about this? And how are you starting to implement this? Because if you say there's a cost of, I think, 142 billion, I mean, by implementing such a system, what will it cost? What will the rollout time be? And then what will the saving be? Because there should be a significant cut in that. That's the one thing. The other also is, I think we, although there's still many, many unroadworthy vehicles that on the road, it's more about driver behavior that's a bigger concern. I mean, if you drive on the N1 out, I mean, that's a nightmare. I mean, people on that stretch between Lanesburg and Beaufort, they drive like nothing, it's like that. But is there anything in place to then say, listen, there's other ways of monitoring driver behavior if you do not have the personnel? Maybe getting your standing cameras in place, and what would the cost be of getting things like that in high-risk areas compared to the possibility of a loss of life? But then you also need to make sure that you need to have the enforceability. But I mean, some of these questions are now a bit away from this, Jen. I don't know about the other members, but I would really appreciate if we can have another interaction with you before we hit the same festive break. We did elect a new chair, and we are one committee, so I don't think it's out of order to request that.
Thank you, Honourable Long. Honourable Vauda.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's been nicely covered by the other members. And maybe if I could it's obvious that the issue of corruption, that seems to be primary, that it's been emphasized already. I think, yes, computerization will go a long way to assist in the And that should be a priority. I like the idea of the use of cameras, especially in high-risk areas. I think that can also assist. You know, it's no more South Africa. The roads are not anymore busy only on the festive season. If you travel on the N4, that road literally is busy 24/7. It can be any time of the month, any time of the night, that the N4 today is becoming increasingly busy. But this is something we actually welcome, because, you know, it indicates that there's commercial activity in the country, and that's good. I did hear about statistics regarding what role is played by the taxis. I think maybe if we're going to look at statistics, that the one that I would really be interested in is the role that alcohol consumption is playing. I think that is even far more significant across the board when it comes to those areas. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Honourable Valda. Thank you, members, for the questions and thanks for the presentation. From my side, just you know that we are going to get the presentation on ARTU in the next week, which will also give us maybe more information. We'll deliberate on that. I think Honourable Lawn spoke about the N1. My concern is just the trucks on these national roads. If there's any way you can prevent road deaths, because if you drive on these roads, as the Honourable Member was saying, it's chaos, and the trucks really don't abide by the laws. I need to know if you can have anything to do with that. The eNATIS system, just coming to that, I want to know, is that 100% working? Because I know in the Northern Cape where I come from, it is not successful yet. So if you can perhaps help me on eNATIS, I know it's been like a bit of a spot on the department for a long time. Yes, and in my capacity as chair, yes, I would really like you to come to us before the festive season. Secretary, please see to it that we ask the department. You said to me that they were not invited previously, but they only come to the portfolio committee, but please see if we can put in an invitation before the festive season. And I'll tell you exactly why, because on the National Road Safety Strategy, it's been rolled out. It's not working as we hoped it would work. Now, for me, if you bake a cake and you put the same ingredients into that cake, you will get the same outcome. We cannot put the same ingredients in at the same temperature and think it's going to have a different outcome. So I want to know what alterations are you going to do to get a different outcome. I think we all want, at the end of the day, the bottom line is we want to help save as many lives on our roads. I think all of us want to have that. And I want you to come up with some creative thinking on how we can prevent death on the roads. Just see if there's some. Yeah, we saw that on Easter, there was a 51% increase in road deaths, Easter. And this is why I say we cannot take the same approach. There has to be a different approach. I'm going to leave it over. If there's any other questions after your answers, perhaps out of your answers, there might be one or two extra questions from the members. Thank you. And also that we keep the answers quite straightforward.
Let's meet from the front. Firstly, I think with regards to Honourable Member Timon, I propose through the chair that what we need to do is to give you a full research report that contains empirical data on exactly some of the issues that you are raising. The demographics also, the age groups, the type of motor vehicles, because it is a fallacy. Many people think that the taxis account for more, but the research and the studies prove to the contrary. And it is actually your small vehicle users that are the biggest problem. But there's also an increasing phenomenon of female drunk drivers being on the rise, and also motorcyclists. Now, it's a science on its own. I think when we do one of the invites, we prepare that as a separate report, because then you see it's based on empirical data. It also talks to the time, it also talks to the hotspots, and that is why we'll be able to say to you, until you get 24/7 policy, some of these problems will not be resolved. But it is something that is beyond our office, because you rely on other spheres of government. But the other role that I think you can also play in assisting us. The provinces themselves also don't come to the party. When we run briefs, they do not want to account for the statistics because those are joint operations. And we are dealing with that by way of stakeholder management, but it becomes very difficult for us to interact with our politicians. But I think this is an appropriate body where you can stay with engaged with them. They too must come to the party and allow us. For an example, Western Cape has piloted the use of the dredger system. And we thought, let us be bold, do it until the law says you can't try to do it. It is working here. Another member raised an issue, I'll just leave it at the level of policy. The issue of cameras, thought about the Muslim alone, or the family modules, but the use of the camera is not only about the capturing, it is about the management of that information in compliance with our laws. That also is dependent on the very inactive system. So, this inactive is bigger than what members think. I will leave the optics to the CEO, but I just want to bring this analogy so that you can have an appreciation of what we're talking about. All I'm telling you is that the courts are the final arbiter. You're absolutely right. But this constitutional democracy at times is also a problem. The court order that was handed down in November 2006 simply said the function must go back where it belongs, to the RKC. The fight is about the transfer management plan. Their interpretation is that the plan must happen over an extended period of time of about 18 months. We say no immediately because we have the capacity to run the system. Now, obviously, if they were to be right on the interpretation, it means for another 18 months we continue to pay 44 million. So I'm not one for diplomacy, it's about money. People will keep wanting to push the envelope. And that is why we are saying no. If we are wrong in our interpretation, let the same court tell us that when it said you must take over the function, it intended it to happen over 18 months. Either we are doing the wrong. But the bottom line is the issue about the labor court. When we were fighting the FEMA, we had to demonstrate the capability to run the system. So in law, we had to take over their employees, which we did for strategic reasons, and we won on that basis. What they then did, they then re-employed some of their employees whom we had taken over at double the salary to try and lure them to go back. Some people naturally went back because we all want extra money. Now, when they eventually lost, the fight that we are fighting now is where they were an SOE, we governed by certain protocols. We're not going to take over those employees again at those higher rates, because now I'm going to have a strike on my hands. You know, those are all the optics, and you can clearly see that people are playing for time. In the past, they got used to the department not fighting. Now we've got a different animal altogether. A state has it and also lawyer. So the things that they used to get easily, we are fighting them and we're opposing them. The final issue about the rural areas, and it's a policy issue. Today, if we are not called, would be accompanying the president and the minister in Limpopo, where a bridge is open, and we're also dealing with rural issues. Two, last week we were, on Monday, Friday, we were in Mafike, where English was the Gariki, you know, right there, you know, the horse carriages are being brought out as part of dealing with the stray animals to also cater for the specifics of that area. I know for the fact that in the Eastern Cape, there is also a particular program that is aimed to deal with stray animals, goats, cattle, and all of those. They are part of a provincial specific program which we fund. So you as a province, you come to us with a clear road safety program. And if we are satisfied with it, we then fund it. Just like we funded the dragon in the Eastern Cape, we funded the horse carriages in the Northern Cape, in the Northwest. That's how it happens. Otherwise, if you give provinces money, they're all going to buy speed cameras, which cannot be enforced because our state is not in place. But at the level of policy, those are the things that you have to carefully navigate. The optics thereof, I've got a capable executive that will be able to give you chapter and verse, but we prefer to give you documentation, read it, let's interrogate, and let's take criticism on how best we can improve on that. That's why I'm attracted to the idea of you tell us at the next meeting what other areas would you like us to focus on, so that we give you documentary evidence beforehand, and then we can have a meaningful engagement. The other issues, I think the CEO will just deal with quickly.
Thank you, Chair. Let me latch on the last one because it too, it spoke about the 9% over expenditure. The 9% over expenditure relates to us fighting and acquiring the images. Let me put it in perspective. According to the then current operator, when the contract was from 2010 to 2015. Their view was that after 2015, they would have a handover period for 5 years. So in their view, the contract was going to end in 2020, not the 2015 as it then dealt with. So when we came in 2014, fighting that battle, we ensured that we take over the system. Our initial intention was to take the system over in 2015 May, when the contract ended. That's when we started the litigation. So that 9% stems from that period when we were in litigation in court. What we then do in 2015, we then, as the chair said, employed all the employees of TASIMA to demonstrate to the court that we're not going to deal with the interaction, we're not going to ensure that the public suffers. So we employed this. So they were sitting from 2015 to 2017 March, not doing anything because the system was still with this service provider. So that cost of the 9%, having the people with the requisite skill, sitting and not operating the system, it gave you the 9%. But what did TASIMA do? When they then took all the employees, they go and re-employ other people, double the amount permanent. When they knew that their contract is dead in 2015, it makes no sense in terms of Section 197 of the Labor Relations Act that you go and employ a person on their contract ends in 2015, but you employ that person permanently. That's the one effort that's why in the labor court, which is taken now. They've lost the labor court. They've now filed with the constitutional court on the forcing government to take over those employees that they employ permanently. And what is the strategy behind the whole thing? Is to cause tension. The employees that we have at RTMC, for instance, we took that person over at a salary of 500,000. They gave those people 1.2. So if you then take these people at 197, so it's going to be same job, same salary. So they're just saying, we want to launch you as government. And we're saying, you could not have gone and employed people on permanent basis, at least to the end of the contract. That's the one issue that is taking us back to the Constitutional Court. The second one is on the thing that the chair has said. On the 9th of November 2016, when the Constitutional Court declared that the contract was one irregular and unlawful, it has to be given over back to the RTMC. They then appealed on the 12th of December to the Constitutional Court on the interpretation. The Constitutional Court dismissed the application in February. They then petitioned the Constitutional Court again. We then started a process to go to the High Court on the issue. We wanted to evict them. Which order we got in March, they appealed the order until the 5th of April. On the 5th of April, because we knew that they were going to approach the SPA, the Supreme Court of Appeals in Bloemfontein, and the law says, until we have lodged with the register, we don't suspend operation. So between those 2 hours, when the court has just given them the judgment, we then evicted them. We had a sheriff on standby that if the court is in our favor, you immediately evicted. Now they went to the SPA to say that we forcefully got and illegally got the system illegal, but they forgot that until we have a letter that shows that it has been lodged with the SPA and stamped, it doesn't suspend the operation. So they went to the SPA. The SPA dismissed it. They saw the full bench of the SPA. It was dismissed last month. They have now petitioned the Constitutional Court on the basis that we have forcefully removed them. So that's the debate that is in the Constitutional Court. The issue of fatality and the legislative environment. It's going to be a process to deal with the conduct of South Africans. What we have now done as a preliminary issue of now partnered with the Department of Education to change the curriculum so that road safety is taught at a tender age. We're giving 30 million to education to therefore develop the curriculum so that the road safety is taught from grade R and grade 12 and as the life orientation process. Initially, they used to spend an hour in a month. We're saying
road safety should therefore be taught at least an hour per week, so that we inculcate this culture at the tender age. The issue of the perception that indeed it's sexy, the statistics and research proves that 46% is accounted by private drivers, taxis only account for 9%, and LDVs, the buses, accounts for 21%, and 4.1% is articulated vehicles. So why is this perception about the taxis? Two, when the taxi gets into an accident, 15 people die for 10, as opposed to the two that are dying at a particular time. But our major problem, if we can deal with the private drivers, the 46% will have won the battle. So the focus should be on individual drivers, in particular the youth, because most of them who are affected are between the age of 29 to 42. Taking the youth gap up to 35, if we can deal with that gap in particular, we would have won the battle. But we must also be quick to indicate that we are comparing ourselves with the international communities. The international communities don't take into account the rural roads. They only deal with the urban roads. We are taking collectively the rural roads as well as the urban roads. Then the issue that then deals with the reckless drivers. Perhaps I must tell the issue, but let's deal with the issue of the increase of the traditional fees. People are just making a noise in terms of the transactional fees. When the chairperson said that the RTMC came to operate in 2005, the then minister, Trevor Myers, gave approval that in order that the RTMC should be self-sustainable, the transactional fees shall be increased by 6 rand every year, annually. So at that time, the transactional fees were 30 rand, that's 2007. You take the 6 rand from 2007 until to date, the transactional fees are supposed to be 96 rand that is paid on every license. And this 30 rand is only taken to 72 rand. There's still a 24 rand shortfall. Why was this money not increased? Chairperson has alluded to the fact that the non-governmental framework as well as operations and oversight of RTMC from 2007. It's common cause that from 2007, RTMC was an unruly horse, where the board was suspended, the CEO suspended, acting CEO came into the fore, as well as 2013. They never increased the fare. So this issue then begins to augment that process. So the 30 rand, it should have been increased by 54 rand, but we then said 54 rand is not accountable. In fact, that the debate should even go further to say if we were to recover from the motorists with the interest that would have been lost at that time, what impact would have been there? So the fact of the matter is that people are just making a storm in the cup of tea. When the facts are out there, they know that the Treasury has approved them by the then Minister, Trevor Manuel, that the transactional fees are going to be increased on annual basis by 6 rand. It has never happened. So this is where we are putting government into the picture, because the ultimate aim is to ensure that the government grant that is given to the RTMC, being the 24% 96, is phased out. RTMC has to be self-sustainable on its own without the government assistance. That's where the two will then be meeting. So we're quite comfortable in dealing with that matter. The issue of the festive season, let's also begin to share with the committee that some of the issues we recall as the committee that there was a government product or campaign called Arrival Light. We decided to stop the Arrival Light simply because one intelligent advocate in Bloemfontein had registered as a sole proprietor. So we're fighting to regain back the Arrival Light, which finally has now been registered back in the RTMC's name in July. So we start dealing with those campaigns because that was the government campaign. We did not follow the soccer match where we give a handshake on the program as it has happened with Mafana Mafana. So be then legally for this matter and finally reclaim the space in terms of the Arrival Right, which is the government campaign.
But the issue then begins to then say, why do we amplify the festive season and the Easter? It's because of the movement, but road safety is an everyday issue because people are on the road on a daily basis. But the festive as well as the Easter and the holiday, you have an unprecedented travel pattern. We have also done a study to check if we want to deal with this reduction. We did what we call hazardous location, 50 hazardous locations. In the top 10 of those hazardous locations are found in KZN, Umlaag, Guamashu, Inan. And if you look in terms of the pattern of how people encounter, how people are dying, if you then deal with those hazardous areas, we are reducing the number. You then talk of the street animals. It's one of the key problems that we're dealing with. But the issue that the community has to assist government in dealing with this case. It's good to have a road safety strategy, but if the road safety strategy does not have the concomitant funding, it's as good as a useless paper. There is no funding in relation to the road safety from the provinces, because provinces have paid us. So we then suggested to the minister that it might be proper that in relation to the road infrastructure plan, a portion therefore should be set aside for road safety in the provinces, because road safety differs. In the Eastern Cape, if you can deal with the stray animals and the potholes, you will have dealt with 30% of our road penalties. When you get to the Northern Cape, as well in Northern Cape, the stress and the white animals in that particular area are a cause. So you need to deal with the problem that begins to deal with the white animals, particularly on the Northern Cape stress. You then deal with the issue of the of housing. Housing, the issue that you are sitting with is the issue of pedestrians that are knocked down by vehicles because they are drunk, as well as sharing the space and the space. The planning of the road in urban areas has not given, is not forgiven in the sense that it allows pedestrians to be on the road. So pedestrians as well as vehicles are sharing the space. So in housing, it is a totally different process that we must follow in relation to the pedestrian. Which pedestrians, in terms of the statistics that we have, account for 60% of the fatality? One, it therefore means that even the planning and issue of the tavern licenses should also be dealt with, because most taverns in our city are along the main route and busy route. So those people that are out of the tavern are also creating a problem in terms of this. The end one is correct in terms of the tracking and the hazardous one. But what is also a problem in terms of N1, N3, and N2? Most of those cars are not roadworthy. Two, the drivers in those cars, most of them are not appropriately licensed. The people who have bought the licenses, they have gone into this. Similarly, with the taxis, if you look in terms of the spread, even in the urban areas, taxi drivers are drawn from three areas, Eastern Cape, KZN and Limpopo. And all of them, if you look in terms of how they acquire the driver's licenses, in, let me take the issue of Potchefstroom. Potchefstroom, most of the people that are drivers are imported from Eastern Cape. But in their import, somebody brings their ID and you then get back to Potchefstroom, having been given the driver's license, but you have never even been in class. So that's the process that they're dealing with, which I'm going to end up in terms of the interview. So the heightened process of the Easter and December, as well as the holiday issues, we are partnering with all other law enforcement. But we are not going to deal with this matter. One of the critical elements is the collaboration between the justice cluster. Until we change, as we have aspired, we change the legislation. For instance, when you die out of a motor vehicle, it might not be called murder. But murder is classified as a Schedule 5 and Schedule 6 offense. But if you are killed by a motor vehicle, you are in Schedule 1. So you only get the bail in terms of Section 59. A person at the police station who is senior gives you bail. So we are saying, let's therefore reclassify the schedule. If you have killed a person out of the motor vehicle, let's classify it to Schedule 5 so that you spend 7 days and apply for a bail in a formal bail application. That on its own is going to be a deterrent to the people that are driving recklessly on our road, the consequence management. and then we deal with the meta that deals with the anti-corruption that was wanted to deal with. We do have a fraud and corruption anti-strategy. Recall that the national, we have the anti-fraud and corruption strategy, but in terms of the law enforcement in the traffic, we're zoomed into our own environment. As I said, we have a unit called Intavo. That Intavo is drawn from the members who were in the crime intelligence, who were in the SAT, who were also then crime intelligence SAT, as well as in the fraud in that particular area. Why we dealt with that issue in our own strategy? Few people will report fraud and corruption, but if you deal with it undercover, when you deal with the syndicate, it's much more better for us to unearth it on our own. As I have alluded in the past, how we have now assembled the evidence, how we dealt with it. But the problem, we gather that information, do those investigations, we have to hand over to the Hawks, because they are the law enforcement agency that is responsible. They will deal with this issue, as I have also alluded, that even when the Hawks, I think last week in Eastern Cape, on Friday, we arrested 11 of them in the syndicate. But it's surprising that most of them immediately get paid at 500 grand. So it's a laughing stock. And even when they are in prison, we said that in counting, they were given 5 years, but suspended. We are saying, if fraud and corruption, the minimum sentence is 15 years. Let's give these people the 15 years. That will send a message to the country that crime doesn't pay. But there's a hazard on that. For instance, in Mpumalanga, a taxi driver, employed by a taxi owner, drives from Newcastle up to Gauteng. He doesn't have a valid driver's license. He doesn't have a PRDP. He drives a vehicle. There's a road that's under construction. He, by ignores the instructions by the road workers, the robot is red. There are so many cars that have stopped. He passes it. At the speed, he gets to a truck full of coal. He jumps out of the vehicle, 15 people die. He is safe. His charge of culpable homicide subsequently is convicted to assault TDH. That's what we're not saying should be the situation that we're dealing with.
I think, Chair, I have summarized all the issues that have, all the inmates who are counters of the Chair in the Northern Cape. Let me clarify the situation. The inmate is fully functional. We know what the process was. The problem that was anticipated by provinces related to the acquisition of the driver's license, the card, the printing of the card. So the problem was with the LCUs, which is not within the terrain of the RTMC as well as the inmate. But the inmate is the platform. That's the card production, which the minister has now taken the decision that it must be transferred back to the RTMC so that you integrate those processes. Mm. The card system is not there. It should be at one center point. But we have attended to those issues. We assisted those issues in terms of the LCUs. We can give the details so that the committee has an appreciation of the entire. But as to the inmate, it's fully functional.
Okay.
Lastly, as you ask us, perhaps, if we have gone to the station 2 weeks ago, it's when Telkom had switched off the line of the inmates on the basis that Telkom was owed, and we immediately approached the court and we got an expired application. On the expired application, we got an order that interdicted Telkom from switching the lines of the RTMC. Was sitting with that order. Telkom will never again begin to switch off our lines because we don't owe them.
Thank you, members. Just Honourable Ntebe, I'm going to give you a short shot at it. Is there any other members that would like to, Honourable Vauda? I'm going to give you as well. Let's keep it to one question short, please. Thank you.
For my part, it's not a question. I just probably an appreciation, but also some more of an advice. And this is the beauty of engagement with the quality of the board and leadership. We want to thank you. But advocate CEO, you are engaging today not the portfolio committee or the select committee. And in future, if we avoid such at name mistakes, it would be better. Because we want to elevate ourselves separate from the portfolio committee. Because we have a specific role to play. You would remember that we represent also what is characterized as the upper house. And therefore, this is the only house where you would find the three spheres of government coming together and located within that specific area. And it is critical, that's why you see us posing provincial specifics. I can take them from the Daum, which is just sharing the border with Northern Cape. And we live side by side in harmony with Pretima. But through your work, you have been able to demarcate without necessarily causing problems within communities about it. So from our part, please, in future, avoid this. We have communicated this as a committee before, that there's a portfolio committee, there's a select committee. And we are the select committee. Thank you so much.
Honorable Vauder.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was listening to the presentation or the responses. This thought came into my mind, Chairperson. You know, the number of deaths on the roads is not increasing so much because you are not doing enough. I humbly believe that it is because there are more and more people using the roads. The question I'm asking is whether any kind of research has been done to relate the number of deaths or mortality, morbidity, road accidents to the number of vehicles that we have, not so much using the roads, but the number of vehicles that we have in the country. Because I think that will give us a good idea and also give us a benchmark by which we can judge to say that, yes, the numbers of fatalities are actually decreasing, not increasing, in relation, in ratio. If we can have some kind of a response to that nature.
Thank you, Honorable Vauder. I'm going to give Honorable Busi. I'm going to stop it here. I'm going to give you the last bit to just answer on that question of Honorable Vauder.
Thank you. There is a study that you have there that we can share with the committee, but that study goes further to show that you have about 11,582 licensed drivers. You have in this country 11,362 vehicles. The ratio and the drivers, how it speak to one another. However, there is something in between. Those drivers, not all of them are valid or qualified drivers to be summer fraudulent. The same on the vehicles. Those vehicles that you see on the road, not all of them are valid. For instance, if you go to Pretoria, Mamelodi and Gauteng, they are printing the license fees. So even if I steal a vehicle, I'll go and have a license fees printed by those from those people. That's in the fraudulent activity. The Karakua, Mamelodi, and Tembisa, where we're dealing with this fraudulent issue. Even the three German vehicles, the Mercedes, BMWs, as well as the G2s, those are the people that are dealing with undercover. It's a huge issue, but we'll prepare and present to the portfolio committee. We need a half a day to take you through this process so that you can understand how these issues are.
Thank you. We want to thank the Road Traffic Management Corporation for indulging with us. And please, I think I must just add on what Honorable Ntebe was saying. And this is that we are representing provinces. You were saying in the beginning that your department, you have got 9 shareholders plus SALGA. Now, I think it's very interesting, but also very important for you to understand that we are the provinces as we are represented here today. And we are actually the important part. We are the role players that go to the provinces and speak to our legislators as well. So I would really advise you to, and through our secretary, that we get a closer cooperation between yourself and us as select committee. There's still a lot of questions that members want to ask here, and obviously we would like to also give input from our side where we can help save people's lives on the roads. what worries me a lot, and I would like you to chew on that, and we have to also go to our provinces on that, and this is on the National Road Safety Strategy, where you're saying there's no funds available, and especially in provinces. We have to look at this, and I think we as members have to speak to our departments as well. I don't know how we will be able to solve this problem, but you can't have a strategy in place if there's no funding available. We're going to sit with more road debt. But from there, thank you very much. I just quickly want to also say the consideration and adoption of minutes, we will deal with that next week. It's not a lot. There's going to be a short meeting according to the secretary, so we will not do that now. And also last announcement on invitations to the Rail Summit of this weekend. Please, members, those of you who can attend on Saturday, please speak to Grace. She can help you on the arrangements to get there, sleeping arrangements, etc. And you would notice that I did not ask members to introduce themselves in the start, but there was a reason. We were really short of time. I'm going to quickly now, we time permitted, I think we did very well, and I want to thank members as well as yourself. I'm going to ask the members to please just quickly introduce themselves, because it's the first time that we actually get together, and I really believe that it is going to be not the first time. I really want us to know each other from there. Thank you. I think, Honourable Launt, let's start from your side, and then from your side, your whole team quickly as well. Don't have to be long, thanks.
I am from this province, and I'm a student here. And my name is Jacques. I'm in Long Tessie,
yes, okay, good.
My name is Kusi Makwebu. I represent the Eastern Cape Province. I'm the member of the NCOP as well. Thank you.
I'm Dr. Walter from Kumalanga, and I'm a
fighter. I'm George Watson, I come from Bumalanga. Thank you so much. My name is
Wimanto, my surname is Mkede. I'm the member of the committee, I'm from the Mato.
Chair, with your permission, I think the chair responsible for the board introduced the team before we started.
Yes, thanks, Honourable Ntebe. I just wanted to say, I think the CEO and the chairperson did do the introductions. So I will be closing it by saying thank you for your indulgence with me, throwing me into the report. Thank you, Honourable Ntebe.
There was a comment from Dr. Jessica that in Kenya, there was a comment suggesting that he picked up from an engagement with one of the committees, and you'll be pleased to note that arising from that, we have now trained 4 drone pilots as part of our law enforcement, and they were trained here in the Western Cape, 2 ladies and 2 gentlemen. I just thought that was all that is.
Well done. Yes, thank you. Thank you for everyone for attending today, and for those not attending, be aware we are looking into that. And we've got lunch for everyone. You are also invited. Thank you, everyone. Have a nice day. We are now dismissed. Thank you, Yaku.
Thank you so much. I'm Mr. Fab.
I do, okay. Why are you laughing, man?
I was done. I'm going to be your PA.
Hey.
Yeah.
You know, well, this is what's happening 2019.
And what took place in that? God, so what do you want to have prevented? Where's the PA? when I'm in ministry, then I check in the hand of the vendor. We are taking the vendor to the other. Whoop is open doors like a bank share on the paper. No, I'm not sure. Whoop is open doors. I remember Melanie. Yeah, I gave up. 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 I For members, yeah. Is there?
The food is outside. Oh. I went to South. South said you must. I'm gonna forward you a form, a memo for the lancers.
Okay.
They did send it to me.
You know, Mr. Papa is also going.
Oh.
They still have to check the others because. When did they, did they confirm?
No, but what's wrong with this, Mr. David doesn't pick up his phone, Grace.
That's the thing about
him.
No, but he's here now. Speak to him. And
but David, no, he's not your chair. No, he sent an email. No, go
ahead. I know him.
And
Mr. Oh,
you think about him at Petra.
And Mr. Mchimu.
No, he's not going.
Maybe a few members.
Okay,
fine.
Thank you.